Before we get into this episode, I want to let you know that tickets to The One, which is our two-day in-person leadership experience, are now available at early bird pricing. So if you're in Australia or New Zealand, then you're absolutely going to want to check this out. The One is designed to expand leadership capacity with big shifts reported from participants in confidence, communication, directiveness, solutions thinking, decision making, and even conflict resolution. You can check out the case studies over on the website of people who have already done this event and the results they experienced across multiple areas of their lives months later.
It has just been such a catalyst for change.
That's been more impactful, and I've had more revelations and light bulb moments go off than anything that I've ever looked at.
I feel like my perspective has completely shifted. It's been life-changing for me.
Do yourself a favor and get this locked in for yourself before prices go up. Grab your tickets to one of the events in either Australia or New Zealand over at theoneliveevent.com. It's also linked below. Welcome to the Lead a New Future podcast. I'm Kate Ruby Aroha, a senior leadership trainer with close to two decades of experience. The leadership I'm about is one that values respect and transparency while harnessing our ability to effect change. With a clinical background, I've worked within highly acclaimed leadership teams in the health sector of New Zealand before spending a decade facilitating advanced leadership experiences across multiple countries. And here's the thing about leadership. Leadership is just as important within our homes as it is within every level of our community, teams, and organizations. In this podcast, you'll find a variety of conversations that connect to our leadership and our lives, where we can impact what matters, where it matters. Let's get into it. This is one of those conversations that I cannot wait for you to hear. I got to sit down with serial entrepreneur and a really good mate of ours, Ty Buddha, who's a Kiwi guy who's the founder and co-owner of two of Bali's most well-known beach clubs. He's also got a number of other business projects on the go. The stories, though, of how he got to where he is today are insanely cool. For example, one of his beach clubs. Think premier spot in the most sought-after area of Bali, right on the beach. Big, huge beach club. Was once a little old combi van that he used to have on the side of the road that served coconuts. Where he started and the processes he used to get to where he is both fascinating and really inspiring. In this conversation, Ty talks about innovative thinking, noticing trends and seeing where things are going to, being deeply connected to your values and to why you're doing what you're doing, and of course, throwing stuff at the walls and seeing where it sticks. This is an incredible conversation, and I know you're going to get a lot out of it. So let's get into this conversation. You are the founder and co-owner of The Lawn and Single Fin, which, by the way, guys, when you come to Bali, then they're the places to go to. They're two of the best clubs here in Bali. They're amazing. And they started off, The Lawn started off as a combi van next to the beach. Can you tell us about where The Lawn started and that little combi van?
Yeah, I guess it's, I always wanted to move. I had the business up in Uluwatu, a single fin and whatnot. And my passions have always been around surfing. And so I just wanted to make sure if I dived into something, it sort of suited my passion. So single fin was running along. We'd been maybe 5 years into it. And I'd always surfed Canggu, probably more than Uluwatu. My mum lived in Krobokan when I was a really young kid, and I used to ride my bike up there and whatnot. And I just always thought that it would be a great place to have another spot. So years before, I was looking at trying to get a space there, and it was quite complex with all the village and stuff. And then what happened was my PA, she was dating a guy, and he ended up coming up to hang out with us a lot at Single Fin, and we were just chatting, and I was like, where are you from? And he's like, I'm from Canggu. And I was like, and my PA knew I was trying to find someone. She goes, oh yeah, Ty, you know how you guys, you're looking for a space, you should talk to him. His dad's the chief of the village. I was like, great. So anyway, we went down there and we're talking and found out there was a couple of spots, but not really. And I said, hey, why don't we just do something really simple? Why don't we just do like a little combi van and like do some margaritas and just like sell some, you know, margaritas and mango juices to the guys coming out of the surf. And why don't we do it in this little car park over there? And he goes, I'll ask my dad. He asked his dad, and his uncle is also, it's quite a powerful family, and his uncle is the head priest of the biggest temple in that area. So they sat down and they were like, well, you can't use the car park, but you can use this block of land because it belongs to the village. And I went and had a look at the land, and it was so quiet back then. This is like 2014 or 15. And there was just not much activity down where that was. You know, it was just down this little driveway and whatnot. And I was like, oh, I don't know, it's a bit quiet. I wanted to be up where the car park was, blah, blah, blah. And I sat down there one afternoon and there was a tree, and I sat under the tree and I was watching the sunset, and I was like, just go for it. Maybe in a few years' time, you know, this will take off. And so I was like, okay, what's the deal? And they're like, oh, just make a contribution to the village of whatever you think's fair. And I was like, okay. So, yeah, we literally started off with a combi van. I put some hammocks down and some beanbags, and we had this slack line that people would go and balance. And it was just like a bit of a fun space utilizing the grass. And, yeah, we had mango juices, margaritas, coconuts and popcorn. That was it.
Oh, my God. What?
And, yeah, and then it just kind of – it got busier and busier and busier. And people liked that sort of rootsy vibe about it.
Yeah.
And then it got to the point where it was really busy, and then I saw all these guys coming to check the space out, and they weren't coming to check it out as guests. They were like looking at the space like, I want to rent this space, you know, like I kind of shine some light on the land, so to speak. So then that we had that for about a year like that, and then we had the village kind of said, hey, Tom, I need to talk to you. Look, a lot of people have taken interest in this block of land. We want to rent it. Would you be interested? And I was like, yeah, for sure. Like, whatever you guys think is the right process. So it ended up going for like a public tender. I think there was something like 35 guys going for it. Some of the biggest names in hospitality and the chief of police and big gangsters and everyone. And I was like, oh my God, I'm never going to get through this. And, you know, I had such a great relationship with the village and the chief of the village, and they kind of just talked me through the process, and you know, I was like, okay, well, I've got the connection, so maybe I can win this tender. And anyway, I ended up coming through and getting it, and then we went into phase two where it cost a chunk of change, so then we had to put something a little bit more substantial on there. And you know, I still wanted to keep it connected to a Bali beach club. I still wanted to utilize and local materials and alanga. I really wanted people to go out and be in the surf and look back in and go, oh yeah, that looks like it's meant to be there.
I love that. I freaking love that. And you've done that. So, because I was going to ask you, when you set up that combi van, did you see where things are at now? But now I'm assuming not.
I could see the growth and development coming. You know, like my first time in Bali was in 89. My mum relocated here and remarried here. So I grew up back and forth. I did school overseas, and I'd come and spend every holiday with my mum. So I was seeing the progression and the hype around Bali. But it kind of it went, you know, Kuta, Legian, Seminyak, and then Seminyak was all the fuss going on. And the progression still had a while to go to Canggu, but it kind of skipped. It just went and missed, you know, a few suburbs and went poof straight into Canggu. And I think that's got to do with the surfing. You know, it was just full of surfers all the time. So there was businesses here setting up, like Beetle Nut was one of the first businesses, and they were selling, you know, like the organic kind of surf food and whatnot. So Canggu, I thought, was probably 5 years to go. So that was my biggest fear when we paid this big lease, because it was a big wad of cash, and I was like, oh man, we're too early. Damn, like we're going to be, you know, I don't know if there's the market here ready for something like this yet. But by the time we built it, and 6 months later, it was just
wow.
Canggu took off, and it ended up being great timing. So yeah, it was a bit of luck on our side.
for those of you who haven't been to Bali and don't know the Lawn, so the Lawn is like, it's such a hot beach club and it's right on the beachfront. And if you saw it now today and you walked in there and they've just redone everything there, you'd be blown away, especially hearing the story of where things have evolved into. And, you know, it's amazing. You seem to be able to spot trends really well, Ty.
Yeah.
Where things are heading.
Yeah,
Sorry.
Is that coming through on the thing?
Yeah, it's coming through.
It's a good point there because I always like to pay attention to what's going on in the marketplace and sort of see where things are going and what youth culture is up to and just see what the creatives. I always find that creatives sort of dictate the trends. They're forward thinkers and they're kind of breaking away from the mold of the pack and they don't want to be, you know, around mainstream and whatnot. So they're always a little bit of ahead of the game. And I feel like I'm quite creative. I've been in bands when I'm growing up. So I like that arts music side. I surf. So to me, that's a creative expression. So I can relate to that side, but then I can also kind of put my hat on the commercial side. So yeah, I feel like I'm always looking forward and seeing what all these guys are up to and what's going to be the new thing or what's everybody up to and, you know, look at technology and everything like that now and whatnot. So yeah, I try my best to stay on top of things.
Well, it's interesting just to think that if that's how your mind is working and you're always looking at where things are trending and where the future's going, to be planning things in advance. So no wonder you've got a lot of projects on the go, because you're seeing different things and you're seeing opportunities, I guess, bubbling up in different places. So you're starting to plan things. How do you, how do you manage that, Ty, when you've got so many projects on the go, so many pots on the boil?
Yeah, I guess this whole pandemic thing was a really good thing to happen to me. I was on this train and it was just steaming forward. And, you know, sometimes opportunities get thrown your way and you sort of start seeing the dollar signs. And you know, I've just had my second child. So I've got two little kids, beautiful wife, and we live here. And surfing's my, you know, and I started getting real busy with work stuff. And I was like, when everything stopped, I was like, this is amazing. This is actually, I really like spending so much time with my family. I'm surfing even more. And I really went back and reevaluated everything. And I rebranded everything and restructured all of our, you know, I went back to our vision, our mission, our values and our core pillars. And then I started saying, okay, that doesn't belong here. That doesn't belong here. Like I was going to do some projects that were just not really me, but I was caught up in the hype of the time. So even though I said no to a whole bunch of new ones in the last sort of 18 months have presented themselves too, but they all feel right. I guess, you know, where do I want to spend my time? How much time do I want to spend doing things? And the demographic of the people that are going to be interacting with that project or whatnot it all came down to making these decisions. So in a selfish way, I've enjoyed this pandemic because it's been a good opportunity to really hone in on, hey man, where are you going? Like, don't just get your head down and forget to look up for a second.
Mm. It was during the pandemic that we had the hangi at your house, wasn't it?
Yeah,
I think that was last year.
Yeah.
I think it was the first Christmas in the pandemic that we were around at Ty's house with a hangi. Yeah. Ty and Henare and a whole lot of other brothers from New Zealand in a group called the Manati Party, which always cracks me up. I love it.
I'm getting a message on my screen from them now, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's a really cool thing too. Yeah, and that's another thing. There was a bunch of us here that – we're all kind of drifters or whatever you want to call it over here in Bali. You know, it's where everyone's sort of come and found themselves or finding themselves or whatnot. And then to find some community around who you are and where you come from, You know, and ours is made up of the Maori and Polynesians, you know, Pacific Islands. So, and, you know, just having those same jokes and the giggle that you hear, the high-pitched laughing and, you know, laughing about the food. It's so good. It's so nice. And I was always really envious of, like, I'd look at the Italian community and they'd all be sitting there cooking up and my, you know, my Spanish friends. And I was like, oh, man, I miss that. I miss that sense of community here. So that's been a really good thing that we've focused in on. You know, all these cool things have been happening, and they also have a big effect on, yeah, not only your personal life but then your professional decisions. And you know, when we're setting our values, I started putting all these cultural values that were important to me and family growing up and how we stayed so connected and so true to our culture. That's got to be part of, you know, our work culture and moving forward. So yeah, it's been a good process. I've found of this whole thing. Unfortunately for some, it's not so good, but I'm taking some positives out of it. Don't get me wrong, my sales reports went down to zero. I was like, I used to get these you know, my different businesses, you get the emails every night of the sales reports and all this, and you see all these, especially in Indonesia, we have a lot of numbers, right, where you can do the billions and stuff. So you get all these fancy sales reports with all these numbers coming through, and then pandemic hits and it's like zero, zero, zero. I call my guys and I'm like, hey, man, turn these damn emails off. I don't want to see these empty numbers anymore. So, yeah, it's the reality of what's going on.
With being in business for so long, though, how long have you been in business? Was Single Fin your first business, or did have things before that?
Yeah, I had a couple of things before that. I had some, I guess you could say, some accommodation stuff here in Bali. And I actually had a bar before that. That was the sort of the launching pad for me to get into the whole, the bar space, music space, entertainment space. So I think it's been about 16 years now that I've been in the game.
So 16 years of, I made, you know, business as highs and lows, and I bet you've ridden out all sorts of moments throughout that 16 years. Did that give you, I don't know, a different perspective when you went through what you went through in the pandemic, and, you know, you're seeing zero through on those emails before you got them switched off? Did that give you a different perspective than perhaps someone who's earlier on in business?
Yeah, and especially here with some of my business partners, they've been through a lot more than I had been. You know, I think I jumped into business just during the GFC, during 2008. So I think 2006 was my first sort of crack at having a good go at a business. So, but we didn't really get affected by it here. But, you know, you had the riots here, you had the 2002 bombings here. Then it was again in 2003, and then the GFC, and you had all these, you know, global catastrophes or economic crisis. And the resilience in some people here was remarkable, and especially some of my partners. And I'd talk with them, I'm like, man, how did you get through that? And they're like, you know, we just got to keep on going, you know. And so I just kind of adopted that mindset. That,
amazing.
And I do it with everything in my life now, because surfing is, you know, I always bring everything back to surf. It's what I can kind of relate everything to. And it's, for me, it's like you're getting all these waves on the head. It's wave after wave after wave after wave after wave, and you just got to keep on paddling. Keep paddling, keep paddling, keep paddling, keep paddling, keep paddling, go on, keep paddling. You can see waves to the end of the horizon. You think it's never going to stop. Just keep paddling, because it's going to stop. And then you'll get back out there, and then you'll turn around, and then you're going to catch a wave, and then you're back on top again, and you're riding the wave. You know what I mean? So that's sort of how I look at all this. It's eventually going to pass, and we'll be back up riding the wave again.
Honestly, Hinari and I feel it's been an absolute blessing too that we've stayed in Bali through this time, especially when I know so many people kind of went home, whereas this feels like home for us. And to actually be here and experience like a community, more like communities coming together, the resiliency here, the conversations I've had with people in different businesses who, they've gone through some really tough times, and no, there is no government funding coming for them.
Yeah.
And yet, man, the attitude, the resiliency, it has been honestly one of the most incredible experiences to feel it and see it and hear it. And then, you know, just very contrasted by perhaps some other things that I'm seeing and hearing. And so, yeah, it's been cool just to hear you say that, and that's been your perspective and what your experience as well.
Yeah, for sure. And then I think you take a look at the locals here, at the end of the day, they don't need much. And it just kind of gives you a bit of a, you know, a reality check that you don't need much. You've got your family, you know, you've got some food on your table. In, you know, you can still move all your limbs and all your body. And you see, I just see that about them here. And I'm like, oh, they don't need much to be that happy, you know, and survive. And yeah, you get all this stuff thrown at you and cash and you want to buy all these fancy things. But at the end of the day, you know, for me, if I've got my family and a surfboard, I can go get some waves. I'm cool.
You got some rice and amazing.
Yeah.
That's really cool. That's the sense that I get from you. Where did your entrepreneurial spirit come from, Ty? Was it innate in you as a kid?
I think so, yeah, because I look back at when I was young and I would have been probably 5 or 6 years old. I was like, Dad, can I have some money? Can I have some money? You know, can I go buy some stuff, chocolates or whatever? He's like, no, go make some money, you know? And so I would climb my neighbor's mango tree and I'd fill up a big box and I'd be knocking on the door in my street and it'd be like $2 a mango, 3 for $5. Like, here you go. Blah, blah. So I already had a little bit of hustle in me, you know, and then I'll be washing cars and so when I look back and I had my first job when I was 11, like I wanted a surfboard and my dad's like, if you want a surfboard, you got to go work for it. And I was like, man, none of my other mates are working. Like, can't I just have a surfboard? And he's like, nah, you got to work for it. So then I went and got a job in this surf factory and I was just cleaning up all this crap, man. It was just like the most toxic stuff you've ever seen. And I'm like, far out, problem, I'm getting paid $5 an hour. But, you know, I saved up and I think that got entrenched into me, the work ethic. And and then as I got a bit older, I was like, well, you know, I started to realize like I had a job and no matter how hard I worked in that job, you know, I went through a bunch of different jobs. I worked in a surf shop. I pushed trolleys. I did whatever I had to do just to have some cash. And I was a lifeguard as well for a long period of time. And I was like, man, if I sit here and watch the seagulls fly around or I save 10 people today, I still get paid the same amount of money. I was like, I don't want that. I want if I work hard, I get rewarded for it. So I think I always had that drive in me, definitely. And I was always reading a lot of entrepreneurial books of, you know, all the Anthony Robbins guys and even Donald Trump and all the guys, you know, who've written something out there. And I was just like, yeah, that's what I want. I want to be the captain of my own ship. Like I want to have that freedom to be able to do whatever I want, whenever I want, with whoever I want. And I want to be in charge. So I just, I think I was 23, 24 or something. And I went, boom, that's me. I'm done. Boom, out of there. And just went, come to give it a crack. And didn't look back. And Bali was the space for me. I had a guy who was going to be my investor and I got all hyped up and we're going to do a surf accommodation because he kind of like laid this map out. I guess I did this fundraiser and we made some money for the club. And he's like, he pulled me aside. He's like, are you happy? And I was like what the hell? Like, guys, you know, 20 plus years ago, guys don't ask each other those kind of questions. And I was like, that's a bit of a deep question, bro. And he's like, oh, I hear. And I was like, oh, nah, not really. He goes, yeah, I know, I can see. And he goes, what's going on? And I was like, I'm not really feeling the relationship I'm in. I don't get stimulated by the job I'm doing. I just, I'm not feeling it. I feel like there's more to life out there and I need to wake up every day feeling stoked and excited. He's like, what's the dream? And I was like, that's the dream. I want to wake up every day stoked on life. I want to surf, pump and waves. I want to eat good food. I want to be surrounded by fun people, beautiful girls. Like, I want to live like that. He's like, so go do it. And I was like, oh, where do you do that? I was like, yeah, that's the dream, but how do you make that happen? So he's like, come for dinner. We got the map of the world out. And he was retired at 35, family man. So I really admired him as an entrepreneur and as a person. And I was like, okay, well, how do we do all this? And we started just tacking. He's like, what about this place? What about that place? And then we brought it all back down to business and what I could potentially give. And Bali just went tick, 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 tick. And he goes, man, you've been going there since you were a kid. You can speak the language. You know the way of the land. And you surf and you have all these connections. Why don't we do something in this sort of surf accommodation or something? I was like, all right, let's do it. So broke up with my missus, quit my job, sold my car, came over to Bali, had $3,000 in my back pocket, and he was supposed to fund everything. He was supposed to be my investor, and we're going to get this surf camp thing. And literally 2 weeks before I was coming over, I had no idea what I was doing. He was like, man, I'm out. And I was like, damn, this is, it's all over. Like, I'm staying. He's like, go. And then part of me was like, fuck this dude, man, I'm going. Like, so I jumped on a plane. I came over. I went and found this little bungalow that was near my mum's house. It had three rooms in there. It was $25 million per year, which is $2,500. I went, boom, there's your $2,500. I had $500 left. I went to the paint shop, bought some paint, painted up some stuff. And I was like, wow, shit, I just spent all my money and I don't want to go back to Australia. I know my mum's here, but I don't want to rely on my mum at all. So I was like, what should I do? And so I went, oh, man, I'm just going to go party. So I went out and partied that night and I met a whole bunch of young surfers and a couple of them I knew. And they're like, yeah, man, we're looking for a place. I was like, why don't you come stay at my place? I've got a villa thing that you guys can rent out. And boom, they paid $1,500 for the first month. So there's half my money back.
And then I just feel like doing a round of applause. I love that. It's awesome.
And I snowboarded from there and I'd take them surfing and partying and blah, blah, blah. And then next people came in and then I kind of became the host with the most, you know? And so like they go, hey man, everything you can think of, like where should we party tonight? To like, someone stole my wallet. Can you take me to the police station? Or like I crashed my bike. I need to go to the hospital, everything. And so I was doing this and I was saving some money and then I got another villa and this villa was a bit more serious and it had like five bedrooms in there and it was kind of fancy at the time and I just put everything into it. And so I had that one and I had this one, I had people coming through and I started with the surf community, but then it kind of just branched out, you know, and it was everything you can think of. I had football players after their grand final trip and then they met a whole bunch of Hawaiian swimwear models and they left and then the girls stayed and then their uncles came and then grandma and grandpa and it was just a mixed bag, you know, and it was really fun, but it was really draining. I was babysitting kind of, and that's when I started going and taking people out to different bars and I knew all the bar owners. One of them's like, hey man, why don't you have your own night here? I was like, yeah, sure. So I ran my own night and it was like Scandinavian night because there's a couple of Scandinavian universities here, so it's full of all these super hot Scandinavian girls, so all the boys naturally wanted to come and hang out. And then my buddy was surfing one day and he's like, hey, I want to start my own bar. And I was like, yeah, me too. He goes, why don't we do it together? I've got a spot but I don't have a concept. And I was like, okay, well, I got a concept. He's like, what is it? And I was like, he's like, can you cook? And I was like, I can't cook to save my life. I have no idea how to cook. But I go, look, everyone's going out to dinner from 10 till 1. From 7 till 10. And then no one goes partying till 1 o'clock. So why don't we just open from 10 till 1 and fill the gap? And we got no competition. And I don't want to do it every night. Let's just do it on Friday night. So that was our first bar, Black Dog. And we opened from 10 till 1 on Friday nights. And it just absolutely went off. And we had some of the biggest bands. Back then, it was all about ringtones. So there's a band called The Siget who had something like 250 million ringtones downloaded. Like, they were huge. And we were friends with the drummer or something because he surfed, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they came and played. They were like, we heard about this rock and roll bar. They came and played, excuse me. And we just, it went off and that was it. And we were just boom, 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 boom. We were snowballing. And that's when I was like, wow, this bar world can make some real money. So, yeah, and the rest sort of snowballed from there. But it was all based on having fun, keeping things exciting, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Thanks so much for sharing that. It's interesting. So many themes have stood out to me as you are talking because you've got to where you are and I just feel like you are, I don't know, you've been so extremely successful and sometimes it feels like with how creative you are, you're only just starting to hit your strides and you've got so much more to go as well with your level of creativity and passion and drive. But what was cool is that guy who said to you, are you happy? And you're like, actually, no. And then you said, actually, you painted what the dream is. And the dream was actually waking up feeling how you said. And
then, stoked on life, yeah.
Stoked on life. And then you went out there and did it. You made some big, bold decisions. You cut some things off. You shifted. And then, yeah, life threw an obstacle that guy pulled out. But you went and did it anyway. And, you know, things started to, I guess, show up for you. And then you just started really following stuff. And you know, I get from you, you're being so creative while you're working. It doesn't look like you're stuck in an office grinding out a life that you don't like. Because I think sometimes people can do that with business, right? They go to launch a business, first something, and then they get further and further away from the actual dream, the original dream.
Yeah. It's funny you say that because you've been to my office.
It's beautiful, by the way, guys. Just like Ty's office is office freaking goals. It's something that should be on Pinterest.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I want to. I met this guy from Facebook, and we end up going on this big luxury yacht, blah, blah, blah. And he's a big executive over there. And he invited me back to San Fran, stay with his family. And I went to the Facebook office and I was like, damn, this is how an office should be. Like, there's food for the staff. It's all open. There's no walls. Or if there is, it's glass. So you can still see, like, I saw Zuckerberg having a meeting in his glass room and went out to, you know, and so I was like, I'm coming back to do my version of that, but way smaller. That thing's giant. But yeah, so I built this beautiful, fancy office, but it was funny because I was spending so much time in there. And then, you know, a couple of my key staff were like, hey, Ty, can we have a talk with you? And I was like, yeah, what's up? They're like, we think you're spending too much time in the office. And I was like, what do you mean? And I was like, they're like, yeah, you're so good when you're out there looking and dreaming away and visualizing and you're in here typing. Like, what are you actually typing on? And I was just like, yeah, man, what am I doing?
Oh, my goodness.
So I had this bit of a realization point that, like, I wanted this beautiful office, but it was more for my team and more for them. And we grew so quickly that I had smaller offices previously and everybody was separated. So I just wanted to bring everyone together. But then I was like, well, I better work in there and show up every day and, you know, and set the example and be there first and leave last and all this kind of stuff. But it's not where I perform best, you know. Like, I perform best when I'm down at the venue saying hi to people, making people feel welcome. And, you know, some guys just come over from California or wherever, whatever, any country, and I give him some of my time and tell him the story of how everything got to where it is today. And, you know, and I feel like those moments when they walk away, that spreads, and, you know, we've built some connections. Don't get me wrong, I still got to show up and do the board meetings and jump in some finance meetings and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I've just been balancing out my time away from the office more and more. Like you said, I didn't want to build a dream life where I'm sitting in an office every day. Definitely not. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's really awesome that you've shared that. It's interesting because the word connector and connection, I think, has probably been said about 50 times in this conversation. I wrote it down like right at the start. It's at the heart of really one of your gifts, I'd say, and superpowers. And you know, you connect into that, and that's what starts opening all the doors again. And it's interesting. I just think that's such a great conversation because I see so many people where either the original dream and they start getting stuck into, and I've done that myself actually.
Yeah.
You know, I had a breakthrough like in about the last year where I realized, oh, so my real work doesn't actually happen when my butt is at my desk.
Yeah.
Because I was associating that with where I work, like I go to work there. Yeah. Whereas I actually realized like the real work that really opens the doors is happening well away from there. Sometimes you've got to sit down to implement a few things, but the real work actually happens well away from the desk.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, no, it's been a whirlwind, but a great journey so far with everything. And yeah, I'm happy with where everything's going. It's funny you say the connector thing. We broke that down into, you know, what is this mission, and it's providing all these spaces. But it is at the heart of it. It's to connect people with themselves and with others. You know, like I think you pointed it out. That's something that I really am passionate about is, you know, I love sometimes when I'm sitting back and we might have a festival and there might be 5,000 people and I can just kind of sit back and go, oh man, look at all these people having a great time, you know, and they're connecting. There's the band connecting with the crowd, or, you know, look at these people who just met at the bar, having sparking up a great conversation or whatever it is, you know, someone sitting by the daybed reading a book, but everyone's sort of reconnecting either with themselves or with other people and that's what gives me a good kick. You know, I enjoy that part.
Mm, yeah. I saw it when we were at your, I think, a launch that you did, and we were
the
eating.
The food tasting. Yeah.
And you looked in your element watching people during that. I saw you kind of were sitting back a lot. I mean, you were doing a lot in the background. Yeah.
Yeah.
What are your
Negroni.
What are your top lessons that you've had in business over the years, Ty, if you were to look retrospectively?
Man. For me personally, just to ensure that I'm a passionate guy, so passions come into it. I think when people sometimes say entrepreneur, for me, like I would say I'm more of a lifestyle entrepreneur. So everything's got to revolve around my lifestyle and what I'm passionate about versus like just an opportunity. I'm starting to just jump into a couple of opportunity things on the side, you know, because I see the potential there. But for me, it's always been around passion. So maybe if you're just starting out in there, I would say it's more fun when it's in and around your passions. For me, it was surfing. Surfing and music was my passions. I played music since I was a kid. I surfed since I was a kid. I live and breathe it. So how could I do something in and around my passions? And that became bar, and then bringing people together. I love doing that as well. So I think the passions side of things, I think the big thing that I've learned too is kind of come back into sort of what the vision and the mission is all about. Because sometimes you can just jump in and then go, hey man, what's all this about? What's my purpose here? Like, what am I actually contributing to society or to the world on a bigger picture? I definitely get like that a lot. So for me, I've been good to be able to kind of press pause. Like I'll get caught up and get super excited and enthusiastic about things, but I'll go back and sit on it and press pause and evaluate it. And, you know, is this in line with my vision? Is this tick my sit inside where my values lie? So that's been a big part of it as well. And another part of it is just have a go. Yeah. Just grit down. Put the head down and paddle and just give it a go. Because sometimes you think you got it all worked out and it doesn't work. And other times you just give things a go. And like, you know, I thought I had it all worked out with this retail space that I had years ago and had all the right brands and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it was all boom. And it just didn't work. And I was like, far out, why didn't that work? And it was just, you know, a bit of timing. We were a bit early for that space. I had a gym. I had one of the first functional gyms in Bali, but I was just too early, you know. But we had the best trainer. We had one of the best big wave surfers in the world, a physio that went to the Olympics. We had all the right ingredients. If you had it today, it would have gone off, but we were just too early. So, you know, in terms of the plan and all that kind of stuff. And then I opened up a beach bar this year called Times next to the lawn in April. No freaking business plan. No, nothing at all. Just like, let's just give it a go for a bit of fun. And it's one of my best performing businesses that I've ever done in my whole life. So,
wow.
So sometimes I think you've just got to just give it a crack. It's almost like, you know, get a few things, throw it at the wall. That one sticks, just run with it and not get too precious about things and don't overthink things. I think that's just coming with my age, maybe age and experience. You know, I'm less precious about some stuff and I just go, yeah, let's give it a crack. Doesn't work. Oh, well, tried it. Didn't work. Let's go jump onto the next thing or, you know, try our best and explore all options and make it work. But if it doesn't work, then, yeah. So I think that would be my three things.
Oh, amazing. Evolve
in and around my passions. Make sure it's aligned with your values and your vision and mission and then just have a go. Yeah.
Amazing. Oh my God. Thank you so much, Ty. What an incredible conversation. I know I got a lot from that and I'm assuming a lot of people are going to get a lot from it. So thank you for your time. Your Instagram, what's your Instagram handle, Ty?
Ty Buddha.
At Ty Buddha. And you'll see a lot of surfing stuff when you're over there. That's awesome. And when you come to Bali, guys, come to The Lawn, which is in Canggu, and Single Fin, which is Uluwatu.
Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time. Super appreciate it.
Thanks, Kate. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. This is a reminder that if you're in Australia or New Zealand and you haven't yet got your tickets to The One, then go to the website now, find the location closest to you and get it sorted. Early bird tickets will be ending soon.
Man, massive breakthroughs, like unbelievable.
Having the balls to actually be myself and not run away from challenges that I've probably run away from in the past and take them head on.
It's taken me to another place. Yeah. I'm just not the same person that I was when I walked in.
If you get an opportunity to experience this event, do it for you and everyone around you.